after the break. See you in a few. Okay. Okay. There you go.
WVOX Worldwide.
With world and national news three times an hour, here's the latest update from Fox News Radio on WVOX Worldwide.
Fox News Radio. I'm Lisa Lucera. Attorney General Eric Holder trying to clear up a scuffle between the Obama administration and a federal judge over comments President Obama made about the health care law. Writing a letter to the federal judge in Texas as ordered.
Holder delivered that letter by the noon deadline today, agreeing the court's authority to review laws is beyond dispute. But Holder also defending the president's comments, pointing out long-standing Supreme Court precedents to show deference towards acts of Congress.
Fox Radio's Jared Halpern, a federal judge handing Viacom a victory in its lawsuit against Google.
A federal appeals court in New York reinstated on Thursday the billion-dollar lawsuit. This Second Circuit ruling that a jury could conclude that the online video service knew it was infringing rights, perhaps willfully turning a blind eye, letting users post copyrighted material unchecked.
Fox Radio's Dave Anthony. Fox News. We report, you decide.
Now with your latest up-to-date forecast, here's Steve Pelletieri's Eye on Weather, exclusively on WVOX Worldwide.
Forecast Westchester County in the vicinity for the evening hours. We'll see mostly clear skies. Through the overnight, lows will dip down into the middle 30s. Continued sunny and breezy weather on Friday. Temperatures will climb into the upper 50s. Mostly clear at night, lows middle 30s. Mostly sunny, near 60 on Saturday. See plenty of sunshine with temperatures climbing between 58 and 63 on Sunday. And then showers possible later Monday. Steve Pelletieri Jr. reporting for WVOX Worldwide and WVIP HD.
Right now we have 55 degrees in your show.
Warning, warning, warning.
You're about to enter the free fun zone on the drive home.
It's just a lot of fun.
VOX.
The voice of Westchester. 1460 WVOX.
We're back. We're here on Brand Talk with John Tantillo and TJ McCormick. And we're mixing it up on all things brands. Here on 1460 on your AM dial, VOX. We're going to be here every Thursday from 5 to 6. So program your car phone with 914-636-0110 so that you could get in on the discussion. And also set your phones on speed dial at 914-636-0110. We'd love to hear from you, and we'd love to get your input as to whether or not the president is in fact being judged on a curve, and whether or not we use the curve to judge almost everything. So is it really fair to ask the question, is Obama being judged on the curve? Isn't everybody being judged on the curve these days? 914-636-0110. So what I like to do now, TJ,
yes,
is I like to get into my winner and loser of the week. And as you know, I choose two brands that I believe have either exceeded or failed in basic brand fundamentals so that you can implement, so that you, our listeners, can implement this into your own life. This show is a very practical kind of show. We want to give you takeaways,
mm-hmm,
and so that you can become the marketing gurus that you deserve to be. But mm-hmm, with that in mind, the winner last week, and I don't think this will surprise too many people, is Mega Millions. Okay, the lottery. I mean, look how
the winner.
Has to be the winner. That when you sell something that people want, you don't need too much to promote it.
Uh-huh.
They will come. And I scream, yell, and carry on,
mm-hmm,
about the importance of marketing.
Yes.
And marketing is about satisfying needs. And if you want to talk about this in terms of candidates, you want to talk about this in terms of services, whether or not you want to talk about this in terms of relationships,
right,
it's all about satisfying the needs of others.
Yes.
It's not about you.
Right.
And so that's crucial to understanding this whole
thing. And for new people to the show, that is the mantra.
That is the mantra.
Yeah.
That's it. And if we can, you know, and what we want to do, and what's good is if you have a situation or you've seen something in your life that you don't really quite understand and you want to understand it from a different perspective, I'm offering, or what TJ and I are doing, are offering this branding and marketing approach, and it's a good model to use in terms of this. And I'm going to give you a great example of this Mega Millions.
Okay.
Many years ago, I hope I'm not going to mention the radio station, but I was at an upscale radio station where I was doing a media buy for a client. I was the advertiser at the time.
Gotcha.
And the account executive just told me that she was very disappointed that one of her clients was leaving the radio show, the radio network's family of clients.
Okay.
And they were the New York State Lottery. And I said, what happened? And they said, well, when they did the statistics, they found that the listeners to this radio station, which were more upscale and more trader types, they don't buy lottery tickets.
Right.
Because they know the statistics. And so there was no, you would think that, gee, these affluent people would be buying even more lottery tickets.
Right.
No, they didn't. And so what does this mean?
Mm-hmm.
It means that when you're doing the marketing correctly, as in Mega Millions, they are looking at this whole demographic of people who are not affluent, but are building on a dream. And remember, that, I mean, you know, hey, you never know.
Hey, you never know. Got to be in it to win it.
Right. And so
the upscale, I don't got to be in it.
I don't have to be in it. I'm making
it. I'm living it.
I'm living it. I know how to do it. If I make my investments a certain way, I will get to that.
Right. A dollar and a dream? No. Get up early, hard work.
That's, well, you know. No. With all due respect, I think there are a lot of people that work hard.
Right.
But the positions that they have do not have the access to. If you're a school teacher, you're living, you know, even though in some districts you may be doing very, very well.
Right.
If you have children, I mean, you have children.
Yeah, good point.
You're living basically hand to mouth.
Right.
So that it's not, you're not going to have a few extra 10,000.
Good point.
To throw in the stock market.
Mm-hmm.
It's generally saving your money for your house.
Yeah.
In other words, there are pressures.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Right.
And so
the brand winner
is Mega Millions for knowing your target market. And getting all of this, excitement, and getting people to,
everybody knew about it.
Everybody
knew
about
it.
It
was on the tip of the tongue. It was part of the pop culture. It was headlines, in all 50 states, people were crossing state lines to go to where they were selling.
Right.
I knew.
Right. Now, on the other hand, a lot of people had mentioned, I should say a lot, the critics of Mega Millions said that this is kind of like evil because, first of all, you're taking money out of the economy because what's going on is this is being given to the state or to the municipalities.
Right.
And the money that they would buy for clothing and for eggs and food, now that what they're doing is they're spending it on this. So it's just a brilliant way that if a brand is strong enough, no matter how much you can say that you shouldn't do it or you should do something, it's not going to work. It's got to be what do people want. And this dovetails on, and I got to get into the loser.
Yeah, the loser is a loser.
I got to get into the but to reinforce this concept of the of marketing, of satisfying needs,
right.
And you're going to love this one.
Go ahead.
And it drives me crazy. I sometimes think that some people are left in the 19th century.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they love Karl Marx,
mm-hmm.
and the second thing they love are railroads.
Uh-huh.
Okay, when the railroad was built, was the first transcontinental,
the Golden Spike.
The Golden Spike was completed after the Civil War in 1869.
Okay,
and then there were problems. Even then, there were problems and funding and all of this other stuff. I mean, nobody, you didn't take the train unless you were very wealthy.
I mean,
it was very, very expensive.
Sure.
So that's another thing.
Uh-huh.
So in 1920, all right, when I think railroads were really at their peak,
sure,
there was only 20% of the population that had automobiles.
Wow.
1920.
Wow.
Okay. Do you know what it is today?
The percentage that have automobiles?
Yes. Well, I couldn't find the exact percentage, but are you ready for this?
Go ahead.
70% of the people in the United States drive to work in their cars.
Wow.
70%.
Wow.
And if we look at the per capita per car, I'm sorry. The number of people that own cars that are the least represented would be New York City, Manhattan.
Sure.
Those are the people who live in Manhattan.
Right. Right.
They want everything by train.
Yeah.
But there are four of them.
Yeah, exactly.
You know. But, I mean, trains are just, the concept is so 19th century.
Yeah.
Where everyone was in a central city.
Yeah.
There were no suburbs. I mean, it's just not practical. I don't get it.
Wow. And you know, man, I'm going to take it a political step further.
Okay, well, you always do. You always do, McCormick.
Well, but you know
and
why?
And then they're going to say, oh, you on your show.
You know
you're
what?
The guy. You're the righty. And I'm saying, no, I'm not the guy that tries to look at it. Go ahead.
I lived in Los Angeles. Los Angeles has one of the worst versions of mass transit. Los Angeles has an entire hundreds of millions of dollars spent for an awful subway that connects nothing to nothing. They have a subway that does the worst traffic in the whole world. They have a they built a subway that doesn't go to the airport. They have a subway that doesn't go to the beach. Okay, right. It connects parts of the city that no. You know who it was built for?
No.
One segment of the population uses. I used to ride that little thing to my radio studio when I was doing a show in Los Angeles. It was downtown. I just thought out there. It was built the one part of the population in Los Angeles that uses. They spend hundreds of millions of dollars to service illegal aliens.
Wow.
Illegal immigrants.
Right.
That is who uses them. I'm telling you right now. Now
right.
I'm saying is that you know what? I think what I'm getting to is where municipalities decide to spend their money and throw it around like that. I don't know.
Well, the point I'm making here.
Which is more important than mine.
Right. No.
No, it is.
No.
No, it is.
No.
Go
on. Cut that out.
Cut that.
Cut
go
that.
On.
Okay.
Ooh.
We have a call. Well, the one point that I'll make, and then we'll get to our caller, is that the railroad is something that has to be a need that's satisfied. And right now, I just do not see railroads as satisfying the need. But we have a Mr. Cam on the phone. What's your name? What's your brand? Where are you from?
It's Mr. Cam from New Rochelle.
Yes, and, Mr. Cam. How are you?
Cosmopolitan world citizen.
Okay.
So the point is, now we can get away from Americana. The 70% sounds correct. I think that's what I remember reading, what we use for commuting. The only thing is, the rest of the world doesn't operate like that. And they consume in Scandinavia and Japan a third of our fossil fuels per capita.
Mm-hmm.
And in the rest of Europe, it's about half.
Right.
So we are polluting the air at three times the rate of the Scandinavians and Japanese.
Right.
Twice the rate of the Europeans. And we're the only country that's doing it.
So, India, China?
China is much more efficient. They pay $6 a gallon for gas. Their income per capita is about a 20th of ours.
But you're talking about pollution.
I'm talking about pollution,
right.
Air pollution, global warming.
China and India don't pollute as much or more than the United States?
Well, the point is they have four times the population.
But, I don't know. But no. Before we go vilify the United States and make us the problem and not the answer, as too many are wont to do, is it not a fact that China and India and other emerging nations are, in fact, polluting a heck of a lot more, if not just as much, as the United States? Forget the per capita. Forget the population.
No, we're not going to forget the per capita. We're not going to forget the population.
No.
We're not going to forget anything because it's a question of effort. And
right.
We are leading the rest of the world down the drain with our bad example of wasting a lot of fossil fuels, polluting the planet, and we can very easily live like Europeans or Swedes or Japanese.
But the problem,
if we simply tax gasoline.
Yeah, Mr. Cam, the problem is that most Americans don't feel the way you do, and there's just no way to convince them to your argument. So even though it may be a logical argument and you may be on the side of the angels, you can't get people to buy what they won't buy.
They won't buy it.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
If we tax the gasoline, then they'll all buy Priuses.
And when you tax the gasoline, that's the politician that will never get elected again. You see the problems that the president is getting into, and he's I think trying not to do that, but I just think it's very noble. And see, you know, Mr. Cam, my point here is that you can't get people to do what they don't want. I always get this because I'm in marketing. People will come to me and say, you could convince them to go and do that, all that wonderful stuff. No, I can't. All I can do is I can't really change attitudes. All I can basically do is satisfy needs. Mm-hmm. And as long as there are in this country people that are used to a certain lifestyle, mm-hmm. it is going to be very difficult. We're not going to be Sweden, I hate to tell you. Mm. And I met, you know, it's funny, you bring up an excellent point, because I was on with a Swedish fellow, and he was making the same argument where people, if you build the railroads, they're going to come. They're not going to use the railroads. Yeah. I got news for you.
Mr. Camp, do you...
We're not going to get high-speed rail because it's too cheap to drive. Why should anybody give up a car when we have $4 a gallon for gas? Yeah. It's almost like bottled water.
True story. I had working in my office Rolf. You know Rolf? Remember Rolf?
Oh,
Rolf was a German national.
Mm-hmm.
And he was from Germany. And I spoke to him about, you know, on the weekends you all get on the trains. He says, no, the Autobahn is filled with people driving to their resorts. And
right.
there's this perception that everyone in Europe is on the trains. It's not true. They drive smaller cars.
Right.
They may not make as many trips.
Right.
They may not take their cars to work.
Right.
But they like their cars as well.
Sure.
So,
Mr. Cam, you know, speaking of cars, I'm curious. That's a heck of a point. The perception really is kind of twisted here in America about your. But Mr. Cam, I'm curious about. So I take it that you and I'm not playing gotcha, but I take it because you sound like you're very convicted, and you walk the walk. So I take it you have a Prius or some sort of efficient car like that.
Well, I have something even more efficient than Prius. I have a motor scooter.
Oh
I love it.
Okay.
That's great.
So
yeah,
now,
it's great.
80cc.
Great. Okay. Now I'm sure that satisfies your lifestyle. Would you like to see it where America has cars where people are potentially taxed out of? I think you already answered this actually. Where you'd like to see people taxed out of driving the car that they really prefer, in other words, people being taxed into driving Priuses and Leafs and cars like that?
Yeah, I would.
So let me ask you a practical question.
It depends on market forces,
right?
Supply and demand,
and also safety. I have a wife and two little girls. I want my wife to win a crash. What do you say to people?
That sounds American. The problem is...
No, it sounds like a man who loves his family. It sounds like somebody wants to make sure that if a crazy driver out there, that I want my wife to have the best chances possible. And I think people have groceries and children and families and luggage. And Priuses are just not practical. That's why they're not the number one car in the whole wide world.
Well, I think you ought to buy a tank.
I bought the closest thing I could.
Okay. Well, Mr. Cam, I just want to thank you for calling in. I appreciate your point of view. All I would like to say is that I think it's going to be a very uphill road because it's marketing is all about satisfying needs, and I just don't think telling people what they shouldn't be doing is not really effective in terms of marketing and branding, but we thank you.
Please call again.
Please. No, you were very, very insightful. Thank you very much. Okay. And by the way, if you like to call it, you're listening, by the way, to WVOX. That was Mr. Cam giving his opinion on all things green.
And lefty.
Now stop. WVOX 1460 on your AM dial. This is Dr. John Tantillo and TJ McCormick, Brand Talk. And now we're going to talk about our loser.
Ah!
Okay, and I mean, this should be not anything shocking. Pink slime.
Mm.
But what's good about the takeaway from pink slime, applied for Chapter 11. So they're done. They're the company that makes it.
Couple of bad news
here
stories.
Here is a great, and this is what separates a mid-level corporation or small corporation from a multinational or a Fortune 500 corporation. In the sense that when this, they should never have allowed pink slime to ever have been uttered by anyone. There should have been lawsuits. Now, you could argue that I don't have money for that. Well, you better find money for that because look what's happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a great example of letting the market, the marketplace,
right,
or your critics, or your non-customers take over your market.
Mm.
It's much like what has happened this week since it's the beginning of baseball, where the anti-peanut lobby refuses to allow peanuts to be eaten at the ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't get over this.
Right.
And I mean, and so what happens here is that lobby, the anti-peanut lobby,
mm-hmm,
it's so strong, and the other folks are just saying, oh, well, here we go. Let's just, it's evil. Peanuts are evil, and look at what we could do. We don't want our poor children getting a peanut allergy.
Right.
And, my thing is, if you don't want to be exposed to peanuts, don't go to the ballpark.
Right.
Because there are more people. Yeah. Your target market. Yeah. I mean, that's just a small percentage of the population.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, I'm afraid I'm not too crazy about crowds.
Right.
So guess what? Mm. I guess I shouldn't go to ballparks or sporting events.
Well, you know what?
Better yet, get a peanut free zone. Let's do it that way. But to force this. I just think it's wrong. But here you go. In terms of if you don't stop it from some sort of a public relations perspective,
right?
And so you got, and that's what we have to do when you encounter some sort of resistance.
Mm-hmm.
It's sometimes, and I've had clients like this that just ignore it, and then hope it goes away. It will never go away.
Wow.
You got to do that, and so. There you have your takeaway. Well, what I like to do now is go and do the crowd favorite.
Yes.
Okay. Did you know that? And where little known facts brought center stage for your enjoyment and continuing education. And so without any further ado, did you know that?
This is Dr. John Tantillo asking, did you know that? Why do some people succeed while others fail? Let's look no further than a boy called Harry from Pennsylvania with a vegetable garden. The year was 1854, and the boy, only 10 years of age, had already created a business out of growing, grinding, and bottling his own horseradish sauce. By 12, he owned a horse and cart and was delivering his products to grocery stores in Pittsburgh three times a week. By 17, he was grossing over $2,400 a year, an impressive sum in those days. With a friend, he founded a company packing foodstuffs. The company went bankrupt. Undeterred, Harry founded another company. He added a tomato-based product. Many competing formulas were already in circulation, but Harry's goal was doing foodstuffs better than anyone else. His motto, to do a common thing uncommonly well, brings success. And success came. His company not only produced a range of sauces that people loved, but Harry was a pioneer of sanitary food preparation and fair worker treatment. Harry's company has maintained his focus. Some products may have changed, but not the core belief, as one of his most famous products is still going strong. Last year, two single-serve packets for every single person on the planet were sold. The product? Ketchup, of course. And Harry? None other than H.J. Heinz. And now you can say, yes, I know that.
And we're back. And that, and if you're listening to us for the first time, we do this each week. Did you know that? And it's a takeoff on Johnny Carson's I did not know that. You know what I'm saying? I did not know that. And it's good cocktail party talk. And
sure.
And
you know, I picture in John's humble abode, I imagine the good doctor spins a big, big wheel and pulls back this huge vault door and walks in, and it looks like Henry Higgins' library with oak ladders, and John every week goes up onto the ladder and pulls out a big dusty volume of a book and finds out a did you know that.
Or we simply go to Wikipedia.
or that.
You know. You know, dust the computer off and pull a Wikipedia. But anyway, so, but you know what's great about this story? And, you know, for my friends that are out there, who have run businesses, and because of the economy, because of the situation, they failed. The thing that's underscored, that people forget to mention, or we pass over, is that Heinz, his first attempt, he failed.
Really?
Okay, he failed. His company went bankrupt.
Right.
And here's another one. Macy, R.H. Macy,
sure,
had five businesses before he got it right.
Wow.
So, I mean, this idea, it's really persistence, and it's not giving up. It's that Winston Churchill of not giving up.
Right.
And knowing your brand, and knowing that this is what I can do.
Right.
And if I maybe make a few alterations, make a few refinements, but not change who I am and what I do.
Yeah.
We can be a success.
Yeah.
And people will buy into what we are, in fact, marketing. Not selling, but marketing.
Right.
Because selling is pushing things that people don't want onto others.
And marketing.
Marketing is satisfying or giving people what they want.
Satisfying a need.
That's what it's about.
Right.
And our show is just about up. If you like what you heard, join us next week, Thursdays from 5 to 6.
Tell a friend.
Must do. TJ McCormick, John Tantillo, Brand Talk, WVOX.
This is WVOX.